This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
What up, everybody? This is Spencer, and you are listening to my dad and his Handgun World podcast. The reason he carries a gun is because he can't carry a cop.
Hey folks, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Well, this week I'm going to talk about covert compact pistols. So I called this covert compacts, and I got John Payne from Suarez International, who's written several articles that have been pretty successful and widely read about covert pistols, these small little guns that we seem to love. And there's so many of them out there now. There's a plethora of these small little, mainly single-stack 9mm pistols. So, you know, recently we've seen Springfield come out with their XDS 9mm, Smith & Wesson M&P, Shield 9mm, which I own, Car PM9, which I own, the little Taurus Slimline guns. And there's just so many of them out there. The Walther PPS. Lots of single stack 9mm, small single stack 45s like the XDS and 45. So I figured let's make a show out of it. Now there's a few comments I want to make about these little pistols. I'm sure you've been watching the news, the firearms news, and you've seen that Smith & Wesson has a small recall on the Shield pistols. There's a little part of the trigger that could be defective and therefore causing the gun to fire if it's dropped. Springfield is recalling the XDS pistols. And I didn't get a chance to completely read their press release before recording their podcast. But it leads me to question something. Okay, within like a week of each other, we got Springfield recalling their XDS models, and we got Smith & Wesson recalling their M&P Shield. By the way, my Shield is not one that's subject to the recall. I watched the video, and I tested it, and it's not subject to it. But here's what I want to say. Here's what I'm thinking. Tell me what you think. This is one of the reasons why conventional wisdom tells you that when a brand new gun comes out, don't buy one of the first models. Don't buy one of the first editions. Wait. In fact, wait a couple of years. Let them get the bugs worked out of it. Here's some examples. When the car pistols first came out, car arms, they had some issues. Okay? Now the car pistols, the PM9s, the P9s, the P45s, the PM45s, that whole series, they've been out for quite some time. And it seems like the guns that you buy now from car arms run a lot better than the earlier models. Of course, I have a model that I've had since, pretty sure it was 2007 or 2008. I can't remember. And mine's fine. But I have heard people say that the more recent ones are a lot better. If you recall, I think there were some issues with the Walther PPS when they first hit the market. Now, all manufacturers have had recalls. I was joking on Facebook, kind of, when I put the post up. Well, you know what? Just buy a Glock and you'll be fine. You won't have any problems. Well, we all know that Glocks have had issues. Recently, Glock had a recall with the fourth generation recoil springs when they first came out with the fourth gen Glocks. I waited a little while until I made sure that Glock had all the bugs worked out before I switched over to fourth generation Glocks. When Smith & Wesson first came out with their M&P series, they had some problems. When XDs first came out, they had some issues. Most guns, when they first come out, seem to have some issues. Here's another theory I have. The more that the manufacturer departs from the original design of the pistol, the more problems they seem to have. We see this with 1911s. Okay? With a 1911 gun, the more that you depart from a 5-inch, 45 ACP, steel-framed 1911 with basic 1911 parts, the more that you stray from that design and start adding things or shrinking the size of the gun, it seems like, kind of just seems like to me, I don't know, maybe you might differ, but it seems like there are more reliability problems the more you stray away from the original 1911 design. Well, think about Glock for a minute. When they came out with the Glock 36, okay, when Glock decided to make a single stack 45, they had issues. Why? Glocks were designed as double stack 9mm service pistols. That's what they were designed around. They had problems with the early 40 caliber Glocks, you know, with kabooms and all that, because a Glock wasn't designed originally to be a 40 caliber gun. Not originally, okay? And, you know, so think about that. And so they enter the single stack market and they have all kinds of problems. Now the Glock 36 is pretty reliable now because they've had several years to make it right. Well, Springfield and Smith & Wesson decided to shrink their guns. Springfield shrunk that XDS down to a single stack gun. Smith & Wesson shrunk that M&P down to a single stack gun. And both of them are having issues. And even though they're minor issues, they're still issues. Just think about what I'm saying here, okay? Just kind of a theory of mine. But maybe it's better to just hold off and wait, even though the new gun looks cool and it's sexy and you like it and it's pretty neat and you'd love to have one of those and it'd be so much easier to carry. Wait. Be patient. Wait until the manufacturer gets the bugs worked out. I think I've learned my lesson, and perhaps that might be a theory. I don't know. Tell me what you think. That's all I'm going to say about that. Okay, let's jump into the interview with John Payne on Covert Compacts. Well, John Payne from Suarez International is back on the show. Welcome back, John.
Thanks for having me back, Bob.
Yeah, no problem. You know what? You've got some good stuff out there that you've been writing over the last year and a half or so. And, you know, for people who have taken your classes, they know you talk about this a little bit in the classes. But you have written a couple of pretty good articles. One of them is called Optimizing Pocket Glocks. And another one is When Your J-Frame Isn't Enough.
When Your J-Frame Isn't Enough was one of the first pieces that I wrote. And it's kind of one of those situations where, the first piece I wrote was kind of a home run. And I've been chasing that home run hit ever since. it's just the way it goes. I discuss a lot of these things with my good friend Roger Phillips. And we discuss topics so much that, of course, we're enthusiastic about all of them because we're constantly looking for a better mousetrap. That, not everyone is always as enthusiastic as we are. And so you take a topic, you throw it out there. If it sticks, great. If it doesn't, you put it on the back burner. And, it may come up again in a few months, and all of a sudden this time it does stick. You just never know.
Yeah. Well, for people that are new to listening to this, I'm going to link to both of these articles because they're both good. You wrote another good one called Optimizing Pocket Glocks. And I wanted to get you on the show this time to talk about covert compacts, not just pocket pistols, but compacts that are very covert but very functional for self-defense. That's pretty much what we're going to focus on, right?
That's what we're going to focus on, Bob.
Okay. Well, let's start with what I think is one of the coolest out there. One Source Tactical is selling the ECP, Enhanced Capabilities Pistol 26. It's a Glock 26 that is really configured in a really cool way. Talk about it.
Well, Bob, one of the things that we looked at was Gabe had an old student payment visit that now works for an agency. Let's leave it at that. And they're involved in some very low-profile covert activity. And we'll just leave it at that. Anyway, he wanted to buy a number of pistols for his organization. And the 26 is what they wanted. Now, I know you and I have bantered back and forth about the Glock 26 and the PM9. To the point to where you bought a 26 and I bought a PM9.
I know. I got you sold on the car PM9. You got me resold on the G26. That's correct.
You know, and I do enjoy using both of them in the right environment. But anyway, you know, I've heard throughout the internet or read throughout the internet that, well, you know, that the 26 is just not something I'd want to carry because it's too big for a pocket, and anywhere that I can hide a Glock 26, I can hide a Glock 19.
You've changed my mind on that. That's not quite true for me anymore.
No. Well, no, it's not quite true, and part of it is pretty much an illusion. When you think of really small pistols, Bob, what are the first two drawbacks that you think of when it comes to small pistols?
Number one is the pistol is so small you can't get a complete grip on the gun. You can't get a solid purchase, and therefore, when you shoot it, sometimes they're uncomfortable to shoot, even in .380.
Yeah, you never know quite where your grip's going to end up after that first shot.
Yeah.
Think of something else?
Well, you got a short sight radius. For some people, for most people, it makes it harder to be accurate at long distances, and that short sight radius makes it, you know, a little tougher to shoot.
Right, if they even have sights at all.
Yeah, some of them don't have sights. That's right.
Or it has the old, you know, shallow little notch in the back and a fingernail width blade on the front. So far we've covered the size of the grip frame, the inability to get a good grip on it, the sights. Well, sights can be a detriment, but most of the time when you're talking about the use of one of these pistols, you're talking about bad breath distances or, you know, I wrote another article called Shooting at Arm's Length.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you're talking about those kind of distances when you're talking about these subcompact covert pistols. But it does limit what you can do with a pistol. Another issue you have with these subcompacts or these covert pistols or pocket pistols is capacity.
That's true.
I mean, why has the J frame been with us for so long? It carries a medium-sized payload as far as the round itself. It carries five shots instead of one or two. And unless something major happens, you can usually count on that little J-frame working in an adverse environment or even working through a coat pocket.
Yeah.
But you know, you've got, once again, a reduced sight radius. The J-frames have never been known for having decent sights at all. I mean, they're not bad. They're not horrible. They're not the worst, but they certainly aren't the best. But have you ever wondered why they never could get a trigger out of a J-frame like you could a K or an L-frame?
Yeah, I have wondered that.
Now, I think a lot of it has to do with the amount of real estate involved and with the type of springs that have to be used to make it go bang when it's supposed to.
Okay.
I mean, if you look at a K-frame, your main spring in that K-frame is a leaf spring.
Okay.
Okay, same thing with an L-frame. With the J-frame, it's a coil spring.
Well, that was, you know, and so there's no way... I mean, I guess I shouldn't say no way, but it's very, very difficult to get the same kind of trigger on a smaller package like that.
I don't think you can reliably get the same type trigger. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Probably not.
Because you're also dealing with a hammer that is got a reduced mass as compared to the K and L frame. So you know, you had to have a stronger spring to give a more positive strike on that primer to ensure that everything worked the way it was supposed to. So the other issue that you had with these subcompact pistols was the triggers themselves. I mean, pick up one of the post-war little Beretta 25s and try the trigger on it. You know, it's nothing to write home about.
No, it's pretty, I'm sure it's very, very stiff trigger pull.
Okay. So what I like about the Glock 26 and the Glock 27 is that your fire control group, your trigger bar, your connector, your trigger housing, all of that is identical with any other small frame Glock. So you can use the exact same trigger in your Glock 26 that you use in your Glock 19 that you use in your Glock 17.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing for the 22 and the 23 and the 27. You know, the major differences in those are going to be your extractor and your ejector. But as far as your trigger components, they pretty much stay the same.
Okay, so since we're on that subject, over the last few years, one of my criticisms of the Glock 26 was because I was shortening my sight radius and I was reducing my round count versus a Glock 19 or a 23 or even a Smith & Wesson M&P 9 compact or something like that. But now with the enhanced capabilities pistol sold by TSD Combat Systems, now we've got a whole different story here because sight radius kind of goes by the wayside. That's not really an issue anymore with that Dr. 3 red dot on it, is it?
No, that goes out the window. The sight radius problem it is a non-issue at that point because you've only got one thing to focus on. When you line up your backup iron sights, which are suppressor sights on this model, and it's co-witness with your red dot, you know, once you've done several hundred dry practice of that, it becomes second nature. So you don't even realize that you're getting your initial sight picture and switching over. It goes to being just one action. It's kind of like when I taught you in CRG, or close range gunfighting, when it comes to dynamic movement, that you think movement first and then go to access your pistol. Because, you know, we're in the gun culture, we always want to solve things with the gun, and people tend to go for the gun first, which leaves their feet cemented to the ground, which means when we're doing 0-5 or TMCO or another class where there's force-on-force involved, you start eating BBs, and no one wants to eat BBs. Once you've done your dry practice with this and you've gotten to where you get that red dot sight picture each time, you no longer have to focus on the dot. You can superimpose the dot on your target. You can actually focus on the target. And your sight radius is no longer relevant at all. The one thing that I haven't had a chance to do that I would like to is take something like I think you've seen my Browning High Power. You know, and it has a traditional cut rifling
mm-hmm.
barrel. I would like to compare velocities between the Browning High Power with this stock barrel and this enhanced capability pistol Glock 26 with the polygonal rifling and its standard barrel, just to see how much difference there is in velocity between the two.
I've always wondered that. I mean, I've always read that polygonal rifling increases the velocity, but I've never really had a chance to compare them. That would be interesting. If you ever do that, give me a call and let's do a podcast and tell us what you found.
Well, heck, if we get a chance to do it together, we might just go ahead and do a video podcast of it, maybe put together some gelatin and have some fun with it.
Yeah, let's do that. So if I can get you back on this ECP pistol for a minute here, right before I started the podcast, we were talking about the Dr. 3 sight, and I was asking you what's the difference between the Dr. 3 sight and the Trigicon RMR, which is also pretty popular. Talk a little bit about that.
You know, I've got, you know, more experience with the RMR, and I'm very, very comfortable with the RMR, and I've got, you know, the RMO2 and the RMO7. Differences being the RMO2 has, mine's one of the older models, but it has an 8mm angle dot, either an 8mm angle or 7.5, you know, one or the other. You know, what is that from Mr. Mom? 220, 221, whatever it takes. Anyway, the intensity of the dot adjusts automatically, and there's no off and on switch on that model.
On the Dr. 3?
RMO7. No,
RMO2.
RMO2.
Okay.
On the RMO7, you can adjust it up or down for intensity, or set it to automatic, or turn it off. And I believe it has a 6.5 minute of angle dot, which means it's taking up 6.5 inches at 100 yards. This Dr. 3. I believe uses a 6.5 minute angle dot, has about the same life expectancy for the batteries. And the major difference in the two is that the Doctor 3 is just a hair, if not the exact same width, as your slide itself. With the RMR, you have a little bit of overlap on the sides, just a little bit. Never has bothered me with the Glock 17 or the Glock 19, and you know I really favor the TSD Tier 1 package for the Glock 19.
Right.
But this Doctor 3 sight is just a little more compact.
It looks like it from the pictures. And again, folks, I'll put a link in the show notes where you can look at all the pictures. It does look like it's smaller.
It, one of the things that I noticed with my Glock 19 more so than my Glock 17, and I'm not sure if it's because of the reduced weight in the slide between the two, but I actually had to use a little clear fingernail polish on my windage and elevation adjustments on my Glock 19 because after probably 300 or 400 rounds, my my adjustments would drift just slightly. And I know that that Gabe and some of the guys at the TSD, they use some other type of sealant that prevents that from happening. Now, I haven't had it happen with my Glock 17, but like I said, with my Glock 19, it did drift just a little bit. And, you know, I'm really obsessive compulsive about where my rounds impact. And if I have that pistol zeroed at 10 yards, you know, I want to be able to keep 10 rounds in the size of a shooter marble at that distance.
Nice.
And some people think it's a little obsessive compulsive, but if I want to take a shot at something the size of an eyeball from a room distance, I want to have the utmost confidence, just not in my abilities, but in what I'm using.
Now, wait a minute, John. You mean to tell me that you can get that kind of accuracy out of a gun that's not a 1911?
Oh, Bob, quit bagging the 1911, man. You know dang well that from 1996 until 2008, that was my duty weapon, was a 1911. And you know the whole history behind that. But the 1911, it may be an older design. They may have issues when they try to run them with things that they weren't initially designed to do. But if you treat it the way it's supposed to be treated and you work it the way it's supposed to be worked, you generally don't have a whole lot of problems with it.
Well, what you said is true. Actually, I wasn't trying to dog the 1911. What I was saying was that a lot of people say, well, you can't be that accurate unless you're shooting a 1911. You got to have that single action, nice fine trigger to be accurate, because certainly you can't be that accurate with a striker fired Glock or M&P or XD pistol.
I think the shooter is much more important in what we're talking about here than the hardware, unless you're just using crappy hardware.
Exactly.
And we know that not everything's made to the same standard. And even, you know, you can take anything that I say, you can take, I can dog one brand of pistol. And I guarantee you somebody out there in the free world can say, I've got this one and show me how it shoots, you know, under an inch and a half at 25 yards, because they've got the one that they that was either done on a Wednesday or a Thursday, not the Monday or Friday.
Yeah, well, I just had to kind of throw that in there because, you know, I've seen you shoot with lots of different types of pistols with a high degree of accuracy. So getting back to this ECP-26 with this Doctor 3 red dot on it, so the Doctor 3 is a little more compact. You said 6.5 MOA dot, right?
I believe so. You know, don't hold my feet under the fire on that, but I believe that was it was the specs on it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a really cool setup, and what I like is they ship this with two barrels, a threaded Glock 9mm barrel and then the Glock OEM barrel that it comes with.
Yeah, that does make it really nice. And, you know, both of the barrels use the polygonal rifling. Now, the barrels that I have in my Glock 19 and my Glock 17 are the TSD match barrels that use conventional rifling.
Okay. So, on this subject of the covert compacts, So you can take something like a Glock, or I know that even if people have some of the new M&P Core Series pistols, they already come with a slide that's already set up to mount a Dr. 3 or an RMR on top of it.
Right. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say one side is better than the other. I still have a lot of confidence in the RMR, and the RMR is a, you know, exceptionally strong sight. What I do like about this Doctor is, you know, it's just a little bit smaller with a very similar size window for viewing. It allows you to get it just a little bit narrower. You know, it's not just the Doctor 3 that really makes this a neat package. This also includes a grip frame reduction, rounding the trigger guard, undercutting the trigger guard so you can get a higher grip on it, and retexturing. And you also get a choice of colors on the Palmer frame itself.
Yeah, I see that. You can get coyote tan, green, and the dark gray.
And as a matter of fact, because, you know, I've always got to throw a wrench in it, I started up, you know, of course, you've seen my Glock 19 that has the, at the time, I believe it was called OD Green, because it's a Gen 3 19. But it's got the OD Green frame and the Aquaterra slide.
Yes, that's a cool-looking pistol.
You know, down here on the coast, I live in a saltwater environment, and I absolutely love that Aquaterra finish. If they get enough people that want that Aquaterra finish, they will include the Aquaterra finish on this package.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And so with the ability now to mount optics on these covert compact guns, we get rid of the sight radius problem, and we basically take that compact gun that in most cases is a little bit easier to conceal, and we also turn it into a weapon that can be used at long range if you have to.
If you have to, yeah, it can be put into service as that, are put into service for that. I don't see any reason why you couldn't take this pistol to 75 yards or even out to 100. I mean, with the standard Glock 26, with just replacing the sights with some nice steel sights like the Warrens or Heinies, 50 yards is not a challenge really with a Glock 26. So with it's just easier using the dot, gives you a more precise sight picture. 75 yards shouldn't be hard at all. And I mean, you and I both have shot the TSDs at 75 yards at your range, and, you know, rang still, you know, 10 for 10.
So, yep. You let me borrow your Glock 19 with the Trijicon RMR, and the last time you were here to teach close range gunfighting, that one bay we were using was, I think, slightly over 70 yards.
Yeah, I believe we lasered that. I believe it was either 70 or 75. I can't remember which.
Right, and I was using my hostage taker target, which is, you know, pretty much about the size of an upper human torso. And at about 70-plus yards, you're right, with that RMR, I don't think I was 10 for 10. I think I was like 7 or 8 for 10.
Well, what I like about using that target, Bob, was the instant feedback.
Yep.
But yes, you take a pistol like this, and it makes those shots. As long as you follow your fundamentals, it doesn't make them hard at all. The other thing that's really neat about this pistol is that you can, in turn, if you so choose, can use a Glock plus 2 extension on the 10-round magazine. It gives you 12 rounds. With the threaded barrel, you can attach a suppressor. And that makes for some very quiet shooting. I think it's just polite. You never want to disturb your neighbors.
Exactly. You want to make sure the neighbors, when they're taking a nap, don't hear you shooting.
Yeah, I've always thought it was pretty funny that you're required to have a muffler on your car or your motorcycle, but you can't have one on your pistol.
Oh, good point. I like that. Can I borrow that one from you?
You can borrow that one.
Okay. I'll give good credit. So,
of course, you know, you can, but, you know, even, you know, I have a suppressor that I went through the whole process to get. But you know, people think that, oh, a suppressor, it's illegal. No, it's not illegal. You just have to take some extra steps to buy one.
Now, I bet your suppressor is almost as long as the pistol.
Mine would be just a tad longer. I use a Gemtech multi-mount, which is larger than the Abraxas that Gabe uses.
Yeah. Now, so that's cool. You get both those barrels. You can put a suppressor on it using one barrel. So this is one version of a covert compact if you really want to go big time and trick it out and do all that. And I think it's awesome. And, you know, the nice thing about this is that if you use the plus two mag extensions, you're starting with 13 rounds in the gun. That's only 3 rounds less than what you're starting in a Glock 19.
Exactly. And, you know, 13 rounds, I mean, 13-round magazine, what does that remind you of? Of course, now I realize we're talking about a 12-round magazine, you know, 12 rounds in the magazine, one in the pipe for 13 rounds. But, you know, when I started shooting at Browning High Power, I was always taught to download it by one or two. And so, you know, I would routinely have 13 rounds in a Browning High Power, so not a whole lot of difference there.
No. And, you know, Glock 26s, these compact pistols like the M&P compacts and I recently had a chance to shoot a compact XD pistol, and I seem to be about as accurate with those as I am with my G19 for some reason. Can't figure out why, but I am.
Well, I've talked to one of my buddies about that, and his name is Ken Hebert. He's the president of the Orange Gun Club, and Ken's an outspoken gentleman. He's a lot of fun to be around. Very dry wit. But we looked at it, and we watched people shooting the Glock 26s, talking back and forth, I think people concentrate more on their grip with the Glock 26 than they do with the larger pistols. And that may have something to do with the increased accuracy. Because on a standard 26 with a flush magazine, you know, my pinky rides under the magazine. So I'm essentially gripping the pistol with my middle finger, my ring finger, and my thumb.
Yeah, and me too. I can't get all my fingers on the Glock 26 with the flush magazine either.
So I think that has something to do with it. People concentrate more on their grip.
Well, I think they concentrate more on the fundamentals too.
Probably so.
They you know, they concentrate more on a nice smooth trigger press and good sight alignment and so on and so forth.
But you know, I'm very, very excited about this ECP 26. And they've even come out with a holster just for this pistol that's being put out by TSD called the Colombian.
Okay.
And you know, I was a student. Still am, but I was a big fan of the ZAC with a Glock 26.
Yes.
Just because it's so mobile and you can, you know, adjust it however you like. And, you know, it's a minimalist holster. But the Colombian is an actual holster. It doesn't cover just the trigger guard. And, you know, it uses two of the snap loops. And so it's secured to your belt. You know, when I use the ZAC, it's just secured to my belt with a parachute cord. But I'm really looking forward to working with that.
Well, I'm looking at a picture of the Colombian now, too. So that's you're right, it's a full holster with the two belt loops. I like that.
And the Colombian will work with the 19 or the 17 as well.
Uh-huh. And the Colombian, I like the belt loops. I'm not a real big, I'm kind of drifting away from holsters with clips, especially in the appendix carry position.
Yeah, I started out with one that used J-hooks and worked my way to using the loops with snaps. And, yeah, it's amazing. I went from, you know, way back in the day of having a bin full of less than adequate holsters from trying this and trying that to now I've got a bin of all high quality holsters, but just depends on what I'm using or where I'm going to be with it. You know, the strong side holsters, the inside the waistband holsters, the appendix carry holsters. You know, I've got the latest Blade Tech Archangel 2 And it's a very nice holster. It's a little bit lighter and a little bit thinner than the original Archangel or Seraphim.
So it's thinner and lighter than the one that Dale Fricke put out?
The initial one. It's a little bit thinner. You know, I still get a lot of good use out of my Fricke products, but I really like the Blade Tech as well.
Okay, I'm looking for that one too.
You know, with my Blade Tech magazine pouch, it uses the Tech Lock to secure it to my belt, so that I can carry it horizontal. I can carry it vertical. It's entirely on how I want to use it.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about the Blade Tech Archangel 2.
Yeah, I believe that's the right name for that one. But a very, very high quality holster. Well, heck, I even have a holster, and I don't even know the name of it. It's a shame, but it's designed to be used with the RMR on my HSGI padded belt system for my rifle gear.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a thigh holster, but it uses a nice retention system, and it's got an area that's been made to house the RMR to protect it. And what's nice about it is it actually locks in place. And this Glock 26, this ECP 26, will fit in the same holster and lock in the same fashion.
Okay.
But you know, it's not one of these awful Serpa locks. You know, that's one of the few designs out there that I just thought was a bad design from the very beginning. And people will disagree with me, and that's fine. I don't care for it. We don't like to use them in class at all. Matter of fact, if someone's going to use a Serpa holster in one of my classes, they have a separate waiver they have to fill out. But you know, I've seen Serpas fail. And in San Antonio, the area where you're at, you know, you've got dirt, rocks, cactus, things of that nature. Down here in the southeast and on the coast, it's, you know, dirt, sand, mud.
Yeah.
We don't have a whole lot of rock. And we were doing a 0 to 5 feet pistol gunfighting, which is probably 95% force on force, 5% live fire. And in the force on force portion, I believe it was, one of our students found one of the only pebbles on the range that worked its way inside that paddle. And it required hand tools to get that pistol out.
Really?
It was locked in there, tighter than a wedge. And so it's just not something I care for. The Blade Tech design looks very similar to a standard thumb break. But what happens is when you hit that release for the thumb break, the retention strap actually springs forward like a mouse trap,
mm-hmm.
to open the holster. To lock it back down, you just grab that strap and pull it back, and it locks in place.
Oh, okay.
Very secure.
Interesting. So this is interesting stuff. So, you know, technology, I mean, it's a great thing, you know. We have red dots now. We have holsters that accommodate pistols with red dots. We basically take these small concealable guns and we make them so much more versatile than they ever used to be. I mean, what's not to like?
Yeah, I'm sure someone will find a reason not to like something, but I mean, that's pretty easy to do. But I think it's really neat what we've been able to do with some of these things. And I mean, let's face it, this ECP 26, you know, it's got its place, it's got its niche, but there's other pistols that also fall into this covert carry type.
Yeah, talk about some of those.
You know, and one of those would be the Carr PM9 that you turned me on to, and you know, that is just an excellent little pistol. I don't know how many rounds I've put through mine, but you've seen me shoot it in class, use it in class. I did the initial 200 round break in with no issues at all. I normally carry it with our TSD branded Corbon DPX ammo. the recoil in it is no big deal with that round. It and is, well, extremely accurate. When I first used yours in Dallas, you know, I think I was at 10 or 15 yards, and, you know, we were shooting the eyeballs out of that target with that pistol.
Yep.
At that distance. You know, it's just amazing to me that a package that, you know, years back would have been a 380 is now a 9mm.
Yeah, and I have extremely high praises for the CAR PM9. As a matter of fact, recently, it's up on my YouTube channel now. Recently, I did a comparison between the XDS 9mm, the M&P Shield 9mm, and the CAR PM9. And I was out at the range, I shot my target with all three of those, and I kind of gave some thoughts on that. So people can go to my YouTube channel, I'll put a link, and they can check that out. But I was impressed with, well, obviously I was impressed with all three of them. But you'll notice when you watch the video, I was probably actually just as accurate, if not slightly more, with my CAR PM9.
Do you think that's because your confidence in that pistol as much as you've used it and carried it and shot it?
I take it back. I was probably just as accurate with the PM9 as I was with the Shield, but I was more accurate than I was with the XDS. Now, does it have to do with confidence? Probably yes. The XDS is not my gun. It's one that I borrowed from somebody else. So before I did the review, I only had a chance to shoot about 50 rounds through it. My Shield, I've given that pretty close to a 1,000-round trigger job already, and my PM9 probably has about a 4,000-round trigger job.
So yeah, that's a lot of rounds for a PM9. I remember some rumors years back that the PM9 was only designed, you know, to last 3,000 rounds before a major rework, and I think you've blown that theory out of the water.
I've blown that theory. I've had this PM9 since, I think, 2007 or 8. I can't remember when I got it, 2007 or 2008. I have changed the recoil spring once, and everything else is working fine. I've got half a dozen magazines for it, and yeah, whoever says that they only last 3,000 rounds are full of baloney. They need to come shoot mine with a lot more rounds than that.
You know, another subcompact that I've become pretty fond of is the SIG P290 RS.
SIG P290 RS. What's the RS?
That has restrike capability.
Oh, okay.
It's not struck or fired. It has a hammer.
Okay.
And it's double action only. Size-wise, very similar to the PM9. One advantage of the SIG over the PM9 is the texturing on the frame.
Okay.
The texturing on the frame is just outstanding.
On the SIG?
On the SIG. They've got it textured to where it actually feels like skateboard tape.
Well, see, now that's good. Since you brought up texturing, let me talk about that for a minute. Because here's something I noticed when I did that YouTube video. I got to hand it to Springfield. I think the XDS texturing is very nice. Some people think it's too aggressive. I want aggressive texturing in a small pistol like this because you and I were talking about this earlier in this episode. Small pistols tend to jump around in the hand a lot more, especially when you're shooting hot ammo.
Yeah, texturing, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does. The PM9 has decent texturing. One negative about the Shield is that's a slippery gun, especially when it's 104 degrees out and your hands are sweating. That thing is slippery. I wish that Smith & Wesson had more texturing on that. So you're saying the P290 has nice texturing.
It really does. You know, and you can overdo it. I mean, you can overdo anything. You can texture that thing to the point to where it feels like a rasp. But the way that SIG did it with that 290, to me, it feels just right.
Well, I'm looking at a picture of it now. You're right. I'm looking at a picture of it. They got the front strap and the back strap fairly aggressive, and the sides of the grip are a little less aggressive, it looks like.
Yes.
Now, John, let me ask you. So you shot a 290?
Oh, yeah, I own one.
You own one? I didn't know that. Don't you think, doesn't it kind of sit a little high in the hand?
No, not to me. I mean, maybe I'm not refined enough to be able to tell a difference. No, not at all. Not for me. It definitely doesn't sit as high in the hand as far as the bore axis that the third generation Smith & Wessons do. That's for sure.
Okay. I got you. All right. So you have a 290. All right. So tell us more about it. You have the RS, the restrike?
Yes, I've got the 290 RS restrike, which gives you the capability, if need be, to if you've got a hard primer, didn't go off the first time, it gives you the ability to press that trigger again.
Okay.
And believe it or not, when I was going through the Combat Arms Instructor School for the Air Force, and we went over immediate action for the Beretta, that was the first thing that they taught you, is if you got a click instead of a bang, the first thing you were to do was to squeeze the trigger again before you did anything else. Now, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's what was taught. And I can see an advantage to that, but it's nice to have. Another nice thing about the 290 is that it actually comes with sights that are pretty much identical to what you would get on a 229 or a 226.
No, that's cool. Well, SIG is always pretty much well known for putting real good sights on their pistol.
They are real good. You know, I'm one of those guys that will tell you that I don't believe night sights are necessary 100% of the time. And I have pistols that have no night sights at all whatsoever. I've got pistols that have just a tritium ampule in the front sight and a plain black rear. I've got some that have the straight 8 configuration. The sights that SIG puts on the 290 are pretty much identical to what they put on other pistols, and it gives you a very nice sight picture. The trigger press is longer than the PM9.
It is?
It is a little bit longer than the PM9. It's still light years ahead of anything that's stock on any J-frame that I've ever owned.
Yeah.
And the more you shoot it, the better it gets, of course. But it's a very, very accurate little pistol. And what I like about, another thing that I like about the 290 is that, it comes with one standard magazine that holds 6 rounds. And then the extended capacity magazine holds, I believe, 8 rounds. And it actually has a grip extension already installed on that magazine, so it gives you a full-size grip when you insert that magazine.
Okay, I was going to ask you that. So the extended mag for the 290 gives you a full-size grip?
Yes, it does.
Okay. I'm trying to find a picture of one with an extended mag, but I can't find it.
Matter of fact, Dr. John Mead, he's our director of tactical medicine for SI. He loves the extended magazine for the 290.
Really? Okay.
And he likes the 290 so much that he quit carrying his Warbaugh to carry that 290.
Really?
So, I mean, that he's a connoisseur of quality firearms. And for him to put up the Warbaugh and to carry the 290 is a testament to his quality.
I finally found a picture of the 290 with an extended mag. So you say it has a longer trigger press than the PM9?
Yes.
So, in other words, it travels farther before it breaks?
Yes, and you have to figure the reason for that is because it actually has a hammer instead of being striker fired.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm thinking about that because it took me a while to get used to the trigger travel on my PM9. I'm used to it now. To me, it's like there's no big deal, but I'm trying to imagine something longer than that.
You have to learn what you have. And you've seen one of the things that I do. One of the things I do to keep me on top of the game is whenever I'm teaching a basic class, I will shoot the student's pistol to ensure there's nothing wrong or nothing funky going on with the pistol before I have them start doing their trigger drills.
Yeah, I've done that too.
And so it gives me experience with a wide range of different handguns. It's not that big of a deal. It's a training issue.
So does your 290 have the 3-dot sights?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And they're night sights, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Well, I got to give it to SIG. I mean, they do a pretty good job on this covert compact pistol to put, top-notch sights like they normally
do. And it wouldn't matter to me if they were night sights or not.
Mm-hmm.
If they were plain black sights, that would be fine with me. But the fact that they are night sights is fine. It's a high quality little pistol. That's another thing. We've discussed the Glock 26, we've discussed the
PM9, the SIG 290.
The SIG 290. Going back to the 26, this is something that you and I have both seen with the 26 and with the Smith & Wesson subcompact. When some people use a extended magazine in the Glock 26. And what I mean by that is using a magazine made for the Glock 19 or the Glock 26 or even the 33-round Glock 18 magazine that we all called the Happy Stick.
Yep.
We've seen malfunctions that have been induced from using those extended magazines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it has nothing to do with the seating of the magazine itself. You cannot over-insert a double-stuck magazine just from the way it's designed. But from my study, what I believe it is the grip pressure being applied to the front of the magazine body that caused those problems.
Yeah, you're probably right. Both,
when we were doing a close range gunfighting class, and I've since I saw it there with the Smith & Wesson subcompact and the Glock 26, and I've since seen it in orange doing some classes with the Glock 26. Now, it doesn't happen with every shooter or every pistol, but it's happened enough for it to evidently, you know, for me to take notice.
Yeah, well, and it's not the first time I've heard that. I've heard people say that they're having problems putting those longer magazines in the Glock 26.
And so what I would say to anyone that wanted to carry a extended magazine for their secondary is to make sure that they take it in and use it quite a bit, get some practicing with it, and just to make sure that it's going to run the way that you want it to. Because it doesn't happen to everybody. But like I said, it's happened enough to where I've taken notice, and I just generally don't carry a Glock 19 magazine as my spare mag for my 26.
Well, I think if someone carried a magazine with a plus 2 extension, a Glock factory plus 2 extension for the Glock 26, I think that's good enough. Your spare magazine now has got 12 rounds, and you started off with 12 in the gun. That's pretty good. You know, 24, 25 rounds on board, I think you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing by any shape, form, fashion. Now, when I'm running the 19, you know, of course, you've seen me do it. When I'm running the Glock 19, it's nothing for me to use Glock 17 magazines with a plus 2 extension.
Well, that's because you can get a full grip on the Glock 19.
Exactly. I get a full grip on the Glock 19, and the little extra length of magazine doesn't affect anything at all whatsoever. Plus, if you consider a 33-round mag to be a happy stick, then I think that would make a 19-round magazine a glad stick.
A happy to see me stick?
No, you got a happy stick for the 33 round and a glad stick for the 19 round.
I got you. Okay. Now, John, have you ever had a chance to shoot the M&P Shield?
Yes, I have. If you remember, I shot yours.
Oh, okay. That's right. You did shoot mine. Yeah, I forgot about that. So what was your impression of that?
You know, it functioned fine. Your pistol seemed to be zeroed for a 6 o'clock hold at 10 to 15 yards. If I wanted to hit a plate dead center, I had to hold at the 6 o'clock position to get a center hit on that. And that's fine if that's the way that you train and you're used to using a 6 o'clock hold. I prefer point of aim, point of impact. But as far as the quality of that little shield, I didn't have any issues with it. Now, I noticed here recently they put out a recall.
They did. Well, first of all, let's talk about the 6 o'clock hold. The 6 o'clock hold was because of the sights that I had on at the time. I've got different sights on it now, and it's shooting point of aim, point of impact. So I've changed that. The recall, mine is fine. Mine doesn't have to get sent back in. There's a YouTube video on how to check to see if your shield is subject to the recall. Most of them do not have to be recalled, but there are some, and so I'm sure that Smith & Wesson decided to put it out there. It's a very, very simple YouTube video. Check that out.
That's good to know. Anyone that has a Smith & Wesson shield, you just check out that video to make sure that your pistol is not one of the ones that's affected by this recall.
I like it. I think it's a high-quality gun.
Overall, I thought it was a decent pistol. I really don't think it compares to the PM9, or is in the same category. It's, you know, it's larger than the PM9,
considerably larger. Yes,
similar payload, I definitely see it being a quality gun. Where I can carry a PM9 in a pocket, I really don't think I could get away with doing that with the with a shield.
Well, the one thing about the shield that makes it difficult is that it's very, or makes it a little bit of a negative, is it's hard to pocket carry that thing.
You know, and pocket carry isn't my absolute favorite method of carry. But sometimes you have to carry in a way that you can do it and still be covert. I mean, let's face it, in our culture, you dress around your handgun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wear a shirt tucked in quite a bit. And, you know, is it a situation where I could tuck the shirt in around the holster and still carry appendix? More than likely, yes. But now you're looking at another dynamic of getting that shirt cleared out of the way while you're getting to your handgun. Pocket carry is a proactive form of carry. But one thing that I do like about pocket carry is something that Roger and I have discussed quite a bit, and it's the being offsides, so to speak. And Roger did a very good write-up on that on Warrior Talk, and it's called being offsides, and it's the hand on the gun concept.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But once again, if you're wearing Gucci jeans with tight pockets, and you're, you know, let's face it, these days printing is no longer an issue as far as legality. In Texas. We'll specify in Texas. You and I are both in Texas. Many of your listeners are not in Texas. But, you know, the tighter your pocket, the smaller the opening, the harder it is to get your hand on the gun.
Yeah. Well, what you're talking about, for people that might not understand, is if you're pocket carrying, you can walk around with your hand on the gun inside the pocket and no one's the wiser.
Exactly. But once again, you have to have the right kind of pockets.
Yeah, deep pockets. And you know, deep pockets, I don't mean a lot of money. I mean, you have to have, well, hey, having deep pockets with a lot of money would be nice too. But what I meant by that statement was pockets that, like you said, are not Gucci jean shallow pockets, but ones that give you plenty of room to pocket carry.
Yes. And, you know, and if I like having options. And that's just one more tool in the toolbox, so to speak. I mean, once again, now we're looking at the Colombian, which is another nice option. You know, you've got ankle carry for these subcompacts,
right?
And that's another whole can of worms, because there's situations where the ankle holster works out real well.
Yep.
And there's others that you know makes it kind of difficult.
Well, one way an ankle holster works very well is sitting in your car driving.
Yes, it does. But, you know, I really don't think that the ankle holster while driving is any more efficient than appendix.
That's true. That's true. I carry appendix when I'm driving.
So, I mean, but it does work there. If you have to access your pistol while you're on the ground or on your back, and you made a comment in a prior podcast about, you know, if you think that you'll never end up on your back in a fight, then you really haven't been in enough fights, or you haven't trained for enough. And you know that I've got an affection for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yep.
And you know, I was raised studying the striking arts. And crossing over barriers to grappling was quite a feat for me. It's kind of like never having learned to swim and getting dropped in the deep end and saying, hey, swim out, or sink or swim. But, you know, if you do find yourself on your back, that is another situation where the ankle holster or ankle carry could work out for you. Then you've got belly bands.
Yep. Well, you know, and if you talk to people who study how fights occur, not just gunfights, but any fight, most of the people who study this will tell you that very quickly the fight normally ends up on the ground.
That can be true. But I also know people that study long and hard and work very hard at stuffing those takedowns and staying on their feet.
If they're trained for that, yes.
You know, if they train for it. And you can watch now, you know, how many people don't watch UFCs these days? It's one of the most popular sports ever.
Yeah, I watch it.
And how many of these guys now are just great at stuffing the takedowns?
Yeah, well, if they're trained for that, the average person is not trained for that.
Well, what is the average person, Bob?
Eating Doritos, sitting on their couch, and watching football.
Yeah, I've never found Mr. Average, and average has never worked in my favor for some reason.
Well, okay, here's what I mean by that, John. You and I talking, and 95% of the listeners to this podcast, we're probably about less than 5% of the actual population. And I don't mean...
We got a few points, Bob.
What's that?
I went down a few points.
Okay, 2%.
No, I'll take your 5%, but, you know, I've got that skin disorder, that vitiligo that causes me to lose pigment in my skin.
Yeah.
And that affects 1% of the world's population, so I went from 1% down to 5%.
There you go. Well, yeah, I gave you a demotion. But what I'm talking about...
Back when I was in the service, you know, whenever you're going to your next base,
yeah,
they would say the easiest way to make staff sergeant was to get there as a tech sergeant.
That's good.
Yeah, that's such a running joke. But anyway, you effectively demoted me from 1% to 5%.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Bob.
Where I was going with that, though, is that most of the people they're not training in self-defense like they should. And I bet you if you look at a lot of violent encounters, the chances are probably pretty great that at least one of the people involved in those violent encounters have not trained much for it, if at all.
Okay, I can buy that. I'll tell you something else, though, Bob. You know, I've dealt with a lot of violent crime,
mm-hmm.
and I've dealt with a lot of crime victims.
People should know you're a police officer, so we'll throw that out there.
And, you know, I'm not saying this is 100% across the board, but a lot of the calls that I dealt with when it came to violence and assaults, rarely did you have someone that would be what I would call a 100% true victim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was always some mitigating circumstances that they stayed longer than they should have stayed. They engaged in conversation when they should have shut up, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they actually instigated the confrontation, and when they got the short end of the stick is when they decided to report the situation. So I'm not saying that happens all the time, but I've dealt with that quite a bit. To have someone that is just 100% pure victim is not something that I run into every day. I have run into people that were the absolute victim, that they did nothing at all to cause what happened to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but I've also dealt with the opposite, with people that, for whatever reason, they took it a little bit further than they wanted to go, and they stayed longer than they wanted to stay.
That's a good lesson right there.
Yeah, you know, there's times and places and situations where your first defense is not being there.
Yeah, your first level of defense is just don't be there.
And the other one is, you know, walk away. But and don't walk away with a blind side where, you know, we don't have eyes in the back of our head. But, you know, just find someplace else to be. Anyway, getting back on the topic of these covert pistols, they make what I consider to be my job. My job is to stay prepared. My job is to stay trained. And these tools make this job easier for me.
Yep. And you know what? With that, we've been kind of talking about this for quite some time. We might want to do a part two on this pretty soon. But with that, I think that's a pretty good stopping point. We've covered about a lot of good covert compacts here.
Oh, I've really enjoyed it, Bob.
Yeah, thank you, John. Your knowledge of the small pistols is pretty good, and thanks for filling us all in on the TSD pistols that are out there, too. It's pretty exciting stuff. Technology has, it's really giving us a lot of gifts right now.
Yeah, I'm scheduled to go back to headquarters here at the end of the year, and we're going to be working on some media surrounding these covert carry pistols. And I have a strong suspicion that you'll see this ECP-26 in a lot of the footage that we're going to do.
I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will. And before we sign off, let's talk about you're coming to San Antonio 7th and 8th of November.
Oh, absolutely. I am excited about going back to San Antonio. You know, we had a really good group of guys there for close-range gunfighting, and it's time to dial it up a notch and do the advanced close-range gunfighting, which, by the way, this will be the last time that I teach this class in this format.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be switched up a little bit in 2014. We're going to be changing some focus and some technique in that class. But this class, this advanced close-range gunfighting, you work off every direction off the face of the clock. You know, we really practice hard in close-range gunfighting on dynamic movement and the beginning stages of dynamic movement, getting off the X, and working on that 3-9 movement. In advanced close-range gunfighting, you'll be working on 1 o'clock, you'll be working on the 3 o'clock, you'll be working on the 4, the 5, the 7, the 9, 10, 11. You'll be working on doing transfers. Whereas before you may have maintained a two-handed grip while moving to your 5 o'clock, now you will transfer the pistol to your support hand while moving to the 5. It's a really neat class, and we'll take you as far as we can go on that range. So on this range, we're looking at anywhere from 70 to 75 yards towards the end of the class, and working that skill set as well. So we're looking at making you as effective as possible from contact distance to as far as we can safely go on the range.
Yeah, it's an awesome class. I've taken it once as a student. This is going to be my second time. And folks, you know, you have to have had some prerequisite, which is an intermediate class taught by Suarez International, to attend. Did I get that right?
Yes, sir, you did. So it's a very exciting class. It's a very fast-paced move class. It's a very fast-paced class. Very little lecture in advanced close-range gunfighting, a whole lot of shooting in advanced close-range gunfighting.
Yeah, about 800 rounds is what the listing says.
About 800 rounds, and I try to keep it very close to that. Now, you know, I've got students that say the more they shoot, the more they like it. And, you know, you have to gauge, you know, how many rounds you're shooting. I try to keep it close to 800, but I've had several students go over 800. But that's because they either want to redo a relay, or where they had, you know, a 3-5 round burst, they decided to do a 6-8 round burst. So you know, you have to be aware of what your speed is and you know how many rounds you're using. But you know, the 800 round count is a minimum for that class, and I try real hard to keep it at that. I know that people have had a problem getting ammo in the past, but I've found that a lot of that is starting to taper off, and that, you know, now I'm not having an issue at all with getting training ammo. You know, sometimes you have to stand in line at Walmart at 7 o'clock in the morning if you're going to get some training rounds, or you order it off the internet. But, you know, it really hasn't been an issue compared to what it was back in December.
No, it's not. And by the way, I got the dates wrong, November 9th and 10th. I think I said 7th and 8th. It's November 9th and 10th. The weather in San Antonio is going to be very nice. The training facility is nice. So come join us. I think we're about half full now, or pretty close to it. So come join us for advanced close-range gunfighting.
Oh, and by the way, Bob, the Houston class that I'm doing September 7th and 8th,
yeah,
it is closed out. It is full.
Closed out. All done. That's a rifle class, isn't it?
That's a rifle gunfighting. That's the last time I'll be teaching rifle gunfighting for 2013. You know, next year, I'm looking at doing 0-5 feet pistol gunfighting, which is going to be putting together everything that people have learned in defensive pistol skills, close-range gunfighting, and advanced close-range gunfighting, putting it all together, and now you're going against a live opponent using the airsoft and force-on-force, and it's a whole lot of fun.
I've taken 0-5, and I'm going to repeat it next year, so as soon as you sign up for it, I'll be one of your first signups. As soon as you list it, I'll be one of your first signups. That's a terrific class.
Yeah. It's a bit for that class. And with that class, quite honestly, the more the merrier. We can take up to 20 for that class when I get on the schedule 2014. But the nice thing about having 15 to 20 students for that class is that you get to rotate in and out of the scenarios. Nobody gets too beat up and too tired. And you know, some people are worried about the airsoft. It does sting a little bit, but it's not earth-shattering.
It's not that bad.
But when you can rotate students in and out, it gives you time to rest in between the scenarios. And, you know, it just makes for a whole lot of fun. You got a bunch of guys that are excited, having a good time. And it's a class that just goes by so fast because you're constantly doing something new. We have you working off your back, working off your belly. You know, you've got three bad guys and one good guy, two good guys and four bad guys. You know, all kinds of different scenarios. And one of the things that I like to do is to take scenarios from actual calls and stuff that I've been to and work them into the situation to make it as realistic as possible.
Yeah, and it's a very good class. John, just do me one favor, though. Don't schedule it in July, okay?
What's wrong with July, Bob? You can burn some serious calories in July doing that class.
When I took it last year, it was July in Orange, Texas. I think it was late July, as a matter of fact. Do it like in March or something like that.
you didn't like having used a snorkel?
Yeah, exactly. John, thanks for joining me to talk about covert compacts.
Hey, thanks, Bob. I had a great time.
All right, safe shooting, okay?
You too, sir.
Okay, many thanks to John. Thank you for such a great interview. If you have some comments, please voicemail me. By the way, next week I'm going to do voicemail listener feedback. I've been collecting some voicemails over the past few weeks. I will get to all of them next week. Plus, I've got some good audio information that's been sent to me that I'll put on next week's show. But if you want to voicemail me, 210-646-1727. That's area code 210-646-1727. Or you can go to handgunworld.com. And when you get to my webpage, my main page at handgunworld.com, if you scroll down near the bottom of the page and look in the lower right, you'll see a call me button. Just click that call me button and put in your phone number, and it will instantly hook up your phone with my voicemail. That's another easy way to do it. By the way, speaking of my website, if you want to get email updates, you can subscribe by email to updates. In other words, every time I put up a new show, you'll get an email. Or if I put up some kind of a change in my pages or whatever, you'll get an email stating that there's been some kind of a change. Kind of a cool way to keep up what's going on my main website and things like that. Don't forget about the Shooters Club. Ben and I are going to plan some promotions the fourth quarter of this year. So everybody, all members, going back to the very first one, you're all going to be involved in a good promotion coming up the fourth quarter. We just put up a new video. It's a good 30-minute long video. You even get to see students practicing some of the techniques that we teach. So it's not just me and Ben. You'll get a chance to see some of the students, see how well they do, see how some of them make some errors, and some of them do quite well. So it's an excellent video up there, nice, good, long, educational video on making those first hits while you're on the move and things like that. I think you'll like that. So if you're not a member of the Shooters Club, consider joining. Just click the Shooters Club page on my main page at handgunworld.com. And by the way, speaking of the Shooters Club, I just sent out some new passwords to everybody. So check your email. Check the email that you used when you sent me a PayPal payment. Remember, check your PayPal email address, because that's the only email address I got for you if you signed up for the Shooters Club. I sent you some new passwords. Okay, I change those passwords every once in a while, so please check that email. Also, check all the class listings coming up that we've got coming up down the pike here. Some good stuff coming up. Level 2 of Beyond Concealed Carry is coming up in September. We're doing a rifle fighting class, a full one day of rifle fighting dynamics. That's coming up in October in San Antonio. We're going down to Brownsville, Texas, to my friends down in the valley, down in Brownsville and Harlingen and McAllen. Ben and I are coming down there to do a one-day class. And in December, I think we're going to be doing a two-day again in San Antonio. Now, personally, I've been going through some challenges lately. Most of you know the situation with my wife. It's not getting any better right now, so it's kind of got both of us a little concerned here. We've been hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst, and things ain't going so well right now. So it's been kind of an emotional week for me, and I'm kind of lucky to just get this podcast out. I'm dealing with some things right now, so I don't know what 2014 is going to look like for my training schedule. I'm going to do some classes, but I don't know how many and where and when. I'm going to have to do some cutting back. I'm just simply going to have to do that to stay home and take care of my wife, which is what I need to be doing when it gets to that situation. So that's the way it goes on that. So if you want to take a class with me, before the end of the year might be a really good time to do it because there may not be a whole lot of opportunity to do that. Now, I don't know what Ben's schedule is going to be like. Ben's probably going to do more classes than I will next year. But a lot of that's to be worked out. We'll see. I might get a chance to do more training than I think. We'll see. We'll see how a lot of personal stuff works out at the home front. So anyway, that's the story on that. Check out the class listings at the Handgun World podcast. Just check out the menu at handgunworld.com on the main website. Please don't forget about my Amazon store. You can also support the show that way. Go to my Amazon store. If you want to just buy something on Amazon, click the Amazon store. If you want to buy one of Glenn Tate's books, you can use my recommended books page. If you want to look at my everyday carry store, you can look at some of the items that I commonly use. Click one of those links. Any of those will help support my show and my efforts or the Shooters Club podcast or signing up for a training class. Folks, I don't have sponsors and I don't run a bunch of commercials on my show. So I do just a few minutes either before or in the middle or at the end of the show, and that's it. The rest of it is just filled with good content. But if you can figure out a way to help out, I'd appreciate that. So, with all that said, I hope you enjoyed this episode on Covert Compacts. Once again, thank you, John Payne. I appreciate that. I'm Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Remember, the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye. An excitable boy.